Hi, everybody. Welcome back. It is the second hour of the Pat Miller program here on this Tuesday edition. Glad you guys are with us as we validated with her in the last half hour. Kayla Blakeson from Fort Wayne's Morning News. Kayla is, in fact, at the border and with all the plane delays and all that. And we'll be talking with her again at 5:08, and then she will be part of a dinner tonight and a thing with journalists of getting ready, and she's going to have some sit-downs with some members of Congress while she's there. And, of course, tomorrow, former President Donald Trump will be there at the border, and Kayla will be there for that. So she's the only one representing this whole area, the first from Northeast Indiana to be at the border. So we're kind of sort of excited. I'm kind of excited about this, too. Love to talk to our representative from Real Clear Politics every Tuesday because of Kayla. We're talking with him an hour earlier from Real Clear Politics, their White House correspondent, Philip Wegman. Philip, hey, how are you?
Not bad. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, very good to have you. So let me ask you this, because Kayla today had fun and thrills of being on a flight. She got from here to Dallas fine, and then after that, the problem that she had was she got on her plane, got off her plane in Dallas. They were having mechanical troubles. They got them all back on the plane. She got on the plane. She sat there on a dark plane for about an hour and a half before they finally decided, yeah, we think we're okay to take off. That's a great word you want to hear. And then she finally got to McAllen, Texas. So she's way behind. I sat there and I thought back to all of my my days in evangelism and all the flights I took. And I know you've done a lot of traveling, a lot of flights. After a while, it just gets kind of old, doesn't it?
It gets kind of old, but it's so nice that all of our little annoyances seem to pale in comparison to the last year and a half of a pandemic.
I mean, yep.
Sitting on a flight for you know, weather or mechanical issues, it's sort of the old normal. The old annoyances are back,
yep.
And they're better than what we were dealing with before. I guess.
Yeah, yeah, yay! It's the old stuff. So. So you just did a recent article there at Real Clear Politics about a member of Congress who was in the midst of trying to commit other people of his party to understand that a position the president was trying to fill should not be filled with the one he wanted to have filled. Josh Hawley thought he had an angle on this, and then a staffer came up to him and said, she's on her way, the she being the vice president of the United States. And it was then that Hawley knew that the president's person was going to be put in place because she was going to break a tie, right?
That's right. And this little dust-up was over Biden's nominee to lead the Office of Personnel Management, which is a bureaucratic little dusty office, but it's actually hugely significant because it's the federal government's HR department. And the policies that they put in place touch every single employee of the government. The government is the largest employer in the country. And Hawley was opposing her because of opinions that she had expressed about critical race theory.
Yeah.
She had hosted Dr. Ibram Kendi in the past, who has done quite a bit of work on critical race theory. And she also had made a number of statements about the fact that the United States was systemically racist. And so Hawley goes in, he opposes the nominee, and he argues two things. One, that if this is the kind of nominee that President Biden is going to appoint, Republicans should oppose her. And two, if Joe Biden is actually the moderate president that he promised to be on the campaign trail, why is he presenting for nomination, different nominees who believe not just that the country, you know, still has to grasp with the lingering effects of racism and some of our past sins, but actually still believes that the country is sort of, you know, rotten to the core with that thing. So, yes, it was a fight over a specific nominee, but this gets at the larger question of how does Joe Biden view the nation? And how are Democrats going to govern?
Yeah, and then I would have some people, some listeners here and some friends I talk to and some people I read who might think it to the next level, who behind the strings behind the president is trying to push a certain, because like you said, on the surface, does this appointment for this office really mean that much, except for what it's saying on the surface? And why would the president, even to the extent of sending the vice president over there to break a tie, why is this one such a huge thing for him to make sure it got done? It doesn't seem like that big of a deal, right?
Yeah, it doesn't seem like that big of a deal. The OPM nominee, normally this is someone who's not going to be involved in politics. Their job really is to be an HR manager. It's very significant because of the power that they have. But if this is the sort of person that's going to be managing so much, then that gets at, you know, the question of what is Biden trying to accomplish here?
Yeah.
And remember, back during the campaign, Biden was really clear. He said that you know, Trump's form of politics were diseased. He said that he was launching his campaign to retake, to take back the soul of the nation. But, you know, if you have, you know, people within your administration who believe not just that the United States needs to improve, but that the entire project is actually faulty, then, you know, that places in question sort of, you know, what his priorities are there.
In your view, with the left, I want to say left leaning, but with the what I think is kind of a cataclysmic mudslide to the left that's gone on just in these first few months of a new administration, is this the administration that you think potentially, whether they're successful or not, they'll make the first pass at the Constitution, kind of like saying, okay, it is a living document, so in its breathing and in its inhaling and exhaling, it's time to alter this document and make it look more like America today rather than America trying to conform to the Constitution. Just in your view, is this the administration to pull that kind of a thought?
I think this administration has been pretty straightforward in terms of how they're going to try and do things. The president is going to push his authority to the limit. For instance, the other day when there were airstrikes in Iraq, he justified those through his Article 2 power to defend the Constitution, through the Constitution to defend the country, as opposed to under his authority through the authorization for the use of military force. That's sort of a debate that's ongoing. Biden has said that he supports Congress, you know, revoking the previous authorization. And so, well, what is he going to do? He has a constitutional authority, so he's going to push it as far as he possibly can. It's clear that the, you know, Democrats and the president, they see the Constitution as giving them, you know, broader authority. But look, you know, the reason why this debate over critical race theory is so important is because, you know, Josh Hawley and Barack Obama agree. Barack Obama recently said that the debates over critical race theory are so important because they get to the story that we tell about ourselves. And Hawley and other Republicans are saying, if you start from the premise that the entire project was about defending the institution of slavery, and if you start from the premise that all of these institutions like equality under the law or you know, the idea of a meritocracy are not actually good things, but actually are systems to advance sort of white privilege, well, then you get to a radically different understanding of the country, and then you govern in different ways. And that is the debate that Hawley wants to have right now, because, you know, Joe Biden certainly presented a different view of things on the campaign trail.
Okay, are you ready for one of these shifts down the avenue with Pat Miller on the hypothetical what ifs?
Sure,
I've got a what if I've been dying to throw your way, because you cannot believe how many people in the last week have come up to me and asked me about this hypothetical or a very similar one. You and I talked that a lot of the Democrats were probably thinking that when they put Joe Biden in the White House, they were really going to be looking to who was just behind him, because a great chance he wouldn't run for a second term and a possible chance he wouldn't even finish the first term. So then the vice presidency became very important. We had those conversations. You remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, here's the latest hypothetical. You remember? And you just tell me, in your view, they're inside the Beltway. Are the Democrats being slightly more uncomfortable with Kamala Harris than they were at the start? Because I'm getting word that the Vice President of the United States is making even faithful Democrats a little less comfy with her than they were at the beginning. Does that resonate at all?
I think that the decision to go with Harris as the VP was one that was focused on just getting the most votes possible. A lot of Democrats were more interested in defeating Donald Trump than actually who got the job done. Biden was a vehicle to defeat Trump, and sort of Democrats and progressives, a lot of them said, we might not get our preferred candidate, but in the end, we just want to make certain that Trump is out of there. Harris was useful for that effort, I think. But we can't deny the fact that there is animosity between Biden world and Harris world. Things might be sort of smoothed over at this point, but it was Harris who, went after Biden on the debate stage and all but said that he was a racist.
Really took him to task there. The whole thing about I was the girl on the bus, that kind of thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But then it turns out that Harris was not a very good politician. She dropped out before Iowa. She doesn't resonate with a lot of voters. And
she has a fantastic cackle, though. Kamala cackle is just, I want to put it on an endless loop so I can play it throughout the day.
She sometimes laughs at inopportune times. So she's not a great political actor, and
no.
She hasn't been, super effective in terms of policy. The idea, though, that the vice president is sort of the one behind the scenes pulling the strings, that's a little too far-fetched, though, because if you look at Harris, and I think this gets to your point, she's been given two priorities. One, dealing with the root causes of immigration.
Right.
And two, advancing voting rights legislation.
Right.
Both of those are zero-win scenarios for this administration,
right.
Meaning that Harris is going to be fighting these battles and won't have a lot to show for it, come 2024 if she's either suddenly at the top of the ticket or in 2028 if she wanted to run again. I think that sort of she has been moved out of the limelight and given these responsibilities. And she certainly isn't the one calling the shots over the White House.
Okay, here comes the other half of the scenario. You ready? You got your crystal ball there in front of you? What if the president doesn't make it the full first term, but before he's removed, what if Kamala is removed? And what if she is replaced with the likes of, hang on, Pete Buttigieg?
I mean, at this point, we're talking about a whole sorts of interesting scenarios. I wish the president well, and I hope that he is in great health. I'm not certain that
Pete Buttigieg, but he didn't look good at the G7. I mean, he didn't even look good.
I'm not sure that Pete Buttigieg ambitious as he is, would be able to pull off a move like that. I think that, with Biden and Harris, I think those guys are locked in together until the next 4 years. I really, truly doubt that, Biden would even go through the trouble. It would be too much of a liability to pick a new running mate ahead of, 24. But we'll see.
Yeah, so you don't think this is a Richard Nixon? Spiro Agnew has to go, and you put in, the representative from Michigan. And then when the president had to retire, the next thing you know, we had Gerald Ford as president. You don't think there's anything like that ready to happen here?
Not at all. Although that would be.
It'd make a great movie, wouldn't it?
It would make a great movie. It would fulfill all of the dreams of small town mayors everywhere. They think that they could probably get a shot too.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. If it happens that way, you owe me dinner at Ruth's Chris. Okay.
Deal.
And if it doesn't happen by the time I'm there, the last week of September for the Fair Commission, I'll take you for dinner to the Dubliner there in the hotel. All right.
There we go. That'll work.
Hey, listen, thanks for your time today. I appreciate you, good friend.
Thanks, Pat.
Yeah, there you go.
Podcasts by Federated Media.